the terrible tribulation. James Oliver Buswell viewed biblical prophecy from what he termed a double lens perspective. To Buswell, prophetic passages are complex but not confused. The biblical writers did not see prophecy as a blurry whole. They understood the eschatological complex to be chronologically distinguishable. A single prophetic text or passage in its distinctive or respective parts or verses can depict both immediate and distant scenarios. While I do not agree with much of Buswell's Reformed theology, I agree with him on this point. Buswell said that the best example for such a double lens perspective is 1 John chapter 2, verse 18. Little children, it is the last time, and as you have heard that Antichrist shall come, even now are there many Antichrists, whereby we know that it is the last time. On this verse, Buswell commented, John does not blur, but rather sharply distinguishes the present from the future. Just as there are now Antichrists, so there will be the particular Antichrist of the future. This is also what is happening in Daniel chapter 11. Daniel chapter 11 verses 21 to 35 refers to the troublous times under Antiochus Epiphanes, which leads to, quote-unquote, the time of the end in verse 35. From here, Daniel leaps across the centuries to another Antiochus, the Antichrist with a capital A. In other words, the closing portion of the last sermon, verses 21 to 35, predicted Antiochus Epiphanes, who foreshadows the Antichrist. We now come to the Antichrist himself in verses 36 to 45. Roman numeral 1. The rulers during the tribulation. The rulers during the tribulation. And letter A, Antichrist's antagonism toward the supernatural. Antichrist's antagonism toward the supernatural. Verses 36 to 37 reads, And the king shall do according to his will, and he shall exalt himself, and magnify himself above every god, and shall speak marvelous things against the God of gods, and shall prosper till the indignation be accomplished, for that is determined shall be done. Neither shall he regard the god of his fathers, nor the desire of women, nor regard any god, for he shall magnify himself above all. Unlike Antiochus, who was so devoted to his gods that he attempted to force the Jews to worship them, this man will oppose all that is supernatural. 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, verse 4 says, Who opposeth and exalteth himself above all that is called God or that is worshipped, so that he as God sitteth in the temple of God, showing himself that he is God. What did Paul write about the Antichrist? The Antichrist will have total disregard for God by setting himself up as God. God will permit this despicable person to do what God himself has determined he will do. Verse 36. Although he seems unstoppable, he is limited within the confines established by God. God is in sovereign control. Look at verse 36 again. And the king shall do according to his will, and he shall exalt himself and magnify himself above every god, and shall speak marvelous things against the God of gods, and shall prosper till the indignation be accomplished, for that is determined shall be done. How much control would the Antichrist think he has over his own life and eventually the world? The Antichrist will believe that he can do anything he wills, both on a personal and world domination level. Verse 37 spells out the Antichrist's rejection of the supernatural. 1. He will not regard the God of his fathers. Many have inferred from this statement that the Antichrist will be a Jew, since failure to regard any other God would not be a negative statement. But I beg to differ if you really look at the context carefully when you go home, all right? The word God, the plural Elohim, could also be translated gods, referring to the Roman deities. It could simply mean that he will reject religious traditions. 2. He will not regard the desire of women. This could mean that he will have no desire for the opposite sex. But since the phrase occurs in a list of objects of worship, it may also be a reference to an object of worship. In Old Testament times, Jewish women desired to be the mother of the Messiah. Hence, the desire of women would refer to Christ. The Antichrist will have no regard for him. 3, he will not regard any God. He will be atheistic. A Communist Party official asked a farmer how things were going. And the farmer replied that the harvest was so bountiful that the potatoes would reach the quote-unquote foot of God if piled on top of one another. The commissar says, "But this is the Soviet Union. There are no gods here." The farmer replied rather wittingly, "There are no potatoes either." That's the commissar being atheistic. And the Antichrist will similarly be so. Letter B, Antichrist's attitude toward the natural. Antichrist's attitude toward the natural. And verse 38 reads, "But in his estate shall he honor the God of forces. And a God whom his fathers knew not shall he honor with gold and silver and with precious stones and pleasant things." What will the Antichrist set up as his God? Military power and might will be the Antichrist's God. No man is completely irreligious. Those who refuse to worship a personal God will honor an impersonal God. Whatever a person holds dear, whatever he devotes his time, energy, and money to, becomes his God. For the Antichrist, his God will be the God of force or his military machine. Even ancient kings did not reject their pagan deities as this one will do. Let us see. Antichrist and his end-time enemies. Antichrist and his end-time enemies. Let us read verses 35 to 45 responsively, and I shall begin. Verse 39. "Thus shall he do in the most strongholds with a strange God, whom he shall acknowledge and increase with glory, for he shall cause them to rule over many, and shall divide the land for gain. And at the time of the end shall the king of the south push at him, and the king of the north shall come against him like a whirlwind, with chariots and with horsemen and with many ships, and he shall enter into the countries and shall overflow and pass over. He shall enter also into the glorious land, and many countries shall be overthrown, but there shall escape off his hand even Edom and Moab and the chief of the children of Ammon. He shall stretch forth his hand also upon the countries, and the land of Egypt shall not escape. But he shall have power over the treasures of gold and silver, and over all the precious things of Egypt, and the Libyans and the Ethiopians shall be at his steps. But tidings of the east and of the north shall trouble him. Therefore he shall go forth with great fury to destroy and utterly to make away many together. And he shall plant the tabernacles of his palace between the seas in the glorious holy mountain. Yet he shall come to his end, and none shall help him. With his strange God, his military machine, Antichrist will advance against strong fortresses. He will reward the people who recognize him and give honor to him by giving them allotments of land. That is, he will pay off his financial debts by giving positions of leadership over conquered lands to his supporters. They, however, will have to pay a tremendous price, a price of selling their souls to this individual. Verse 39. Although the Roman beast will rule supreme in his kingdom, there will be others outside his kingdom who will oppose him. The first of these is the king of the south. Verse 40. In the earlier part of the chapter, this phrase always referred to Egypt. We may conclude that this phrase means Egypt in verse 42. Egypt first moves against Israel, which is part of the domain of the beast. The beast made a covenant with Israel at the beginning of the tribulation. At the same time, the king of the north moves against Israel, forming a pincer movement against the Antichrist. The king of the north is related to Syria, which will possibly cooperate with northern allies. Now, verses 40 to 45 constitute a difficult section that predicts the warfare of the Antichrist. This sermon cannot attempt to cover the different views on this passage. Suffice to say that there are three main views. The views are organized according to when their proponents think the events of verses 40 to 45 will take place during the 7-year tribulation. View 1. Events are in the first half of the tribulation. Events are in the first half of the tribulation. View 2. Events are in the middle of the tribulation. Events are in the middle of the tribulation. View 3. Events are at the end of the tribulation. Events are at the end of the tribulation. The key difference between the three views is who the subject in verse 45 is and what he will do before he is destroyed. Is he the king of the north or the Antichrist? What will he do before he is destroyed? No matter what the answers are, all three views agree that the subject in verse 45 will be helpless and unable to preserve his own life. He shall come to his end, and none shall help him. Roman numeral 2, the resister during the tribulation. The resister during the tribulation. A consultant was brought in to train and motivate the corporate troops. He got up to speak, and it soon became obvious that there was great resistance among his audience. They were conveying with their body language and their lack of enthusiasm that they were not with him. The speaker paused for a moment to gain their attention and said, "This reminds me a great deal of trying to teach a pig to sing. It costs a lot of money, and it makes the pig mad." The ice was broken, and the communication began. Just as the audience were initially resistors of the consultant, Michael will be the resistor during the tribulation. Daniel chapter 12 verse 1 says, "And at that time shall Michael stand up, the great prince which standeth for the children of thy people, and there shall be a time of trouble, such as never was since there was a nation even to that same time. And at that time thy people shall be delivered, every one that shall be found written in the book." The worst time of trouble ever known to man will begin to unfold in the great tribulation, cross-reference with Matthew chapter 24 verse 21. Antichrist would annihilate the Jews during the second half of the tribulation if there were no supernatural help. Michael identified earlier in Daniel chapter 10 verse 21 as Israel's prince will stand guard on behalf of the Jews. Revelation chapter 12 verses 7 to 12 describes how Michael and his angels fight against the devil and his angels and defeat them, casting them from heaven during the second half of the tribulation. This time of trouble will be greater than has been since there was a nation even to that same time. Verse 1. Jeremiah chapter 30 verse 7 calls it the time of Jacob's trouble. Christ warned of it in Matthew chapter 24 verses 15 to 22. Revelation chapter 12 verses 13 to 17 also presents it. Satan will attempt to annihilate the nation. Zechariah chapter 13 verse 8 indicates that 2/3 of the Jews will die during the tribulation. Only because of God's deliverance will any Jews escape death. Zechariah chapter 13 verses 8 to 9 says, "And it shall come to pass, then all the land, saith the Lord, two parts then shall be cut off and die, but the third shall be left therein. And I will bring the third part through the fire, and will refine them as silver is refined, and will try them as gold is tried. They shall call on my name, and I will hear them. I will say, it is my people, and they shall say, the Lord is my God." What will the 1/3 evidence by their escape? What will the 1/3 evidence by their escape? That they have accepted their Messiah and received salvation. Many other saved Jews will be martyred during that second half of Daniel's 70th week. Christ stated, in fact, that if those 7 years were extended one more day, every last person on earth, saved and unsaved, would be dead. Matthew chapter 24, verse 22. Roman numeral 3, the reckoning after the tribulation. The reckoning after the tribulation. Verses 2 to 3 reads, "And many of them that sleep in the dust of the earth shall awake, some to everlasting life, and some to shame and everlasting contempt. And they that be wise shall shine as the brightness of the firmament, and they that turn many to righteousness as the stars forever and ever." Only saved people, Jews and Gentiles, will enter the millennial kingdom. The unsaved who survive the tribulation will be destroyed at the second coming of Christ or removed in the judgments to follow. Cross-reference with Matthew chapter 24, verses 37 to 41. But what of those saints who died during the tribulation? What of the other Old Testament saints now dead? Will they have part in the millennial kingdom? Well, verse 2 says that those believers will be resurrected after the tribulation and before the millennium. Some will be resurrected to everlasting life, and the others, the unsaved, will be resurrected to shame and everlasting contempt. But be careful here. Revelation chapter 20 verses 4 to 6 further explains that the resurrection of the saints will be before the millennium and that of the unsaved will be after the millennium. Even as the Maccabees led many Jews to resist Antiochus and encouraged them to remain faithful to God, Daniel 11:33, so during the tribulation, there will be those who will be wise and turn many to righteousness, verse 3. Although the persecution will be great, the tribulation will be a time of great evangelism. Many will trust in Christ. Read for yourself Revelation chapter 7. Those who are faithful in their witness will be rewarded. They shall shine as the brightness of the firmament, as the stars forever and ever. Verse 3. Daniel chapter 11 concludes with prophecies concerning the Antichrist and two of his end time foes. The world leader will speak against God as well as all other gods as he atheistically exalts himself. He will rule by force and expect the world to submit to him. Daniel chapter 12 verses 1 to 3 provides additional insight on the tribulation. The word tribulation comes from a Latin word tribulum, which means a threshing sledge. The ancient farmers would use the tribulum to beat the heads of the grain, separating the chaff from the wheat. Tribulation, therefore, is a type of trouble designed to separate the chaff from the wheat. It is no wonder that the period we are looking at today is called the tribulation with a capital T. It comes upon the world to separate the unsaved from the saved. The question is which category you belong to. If you are saved now, you do not belong to either category. Before the wrath of God befalls this wicked world, either you'll be resurrected as a believer who has already died in Christ when Jesus returns in the clouds, or you'll be raptured as a believer who is still alive on earth when Jesus returns in the clouds. 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, verses 16 to 17. But if you have no assurance of salvation, and if you are still alive on earth when Jesus returns in the clouds, it is like a traveler who has not bought his flight ticket. When the plane is leaving now, this very hour, how can you join the flight? Oh, to be stranded to face a tribulation when others in your family are gone above. Think about it.